We're doing Pirkei Avot with the Jewish Home. We're up to the first chapter, the seventh Mishnah, Nitai Ha'Arbeli. The city of Arbel is where Dina is buried, right? Dina, the daughter of Yaakov. Nitai, from the city of Arbel, Ha'Arbeli. He says the following, Harchek, distance yourself, Mishachein Ra, from a bad neighbor. Nitai, from the city of Arbel. Nitai Ha'Arbeli. Distance yourself from an evil neighbor. The Mishnah says in Masechet Sota, Harbe Shcheinim Ra'im Osim. Evil neighbors can do a lot. Our sages say, when a woman is not faithful to her husband, we assume the first cause is a bad neighbor. And so a person has to be wise and be careful. Be careful with their neighbors, be careful in their relationship with their neighbors. The Gemara tells us there's a person who's drinking a cup of wine and a fly falls into the cup of wine. So the Gemara says one guy tosses the whole cup, he won't drink the cup of wine. The next guy takes out the fly and drinks the rest of the wine. And the third guy, he takes out the fly and he licks off its wings to make sure he gets every drop, and then he tosses the fly and drinks the wine. The Gemara says there are attitudes among people. There's a person who says, my wife shouldn't talk to anyone. That was who? That was the Gemara says. Who does the Gemara say that about?
The guy who throws out the whole cup of wine.
The guy who throws out the whole cup of wine. The Gemara says that about. The Gemara says that about. About. What was the name? I forgot his name. Just a second. One second. The Gemara says that about. It'll come back to me, Bezachem. I forgot the name of the rabbi. It says that when he would leave the house, he would lock the doors and the windows. So his wife shouldn't talk to anyone. Now he was right. She cheated on him. And she gave birth to a boy named Yeshu in the end. But the Gemara says he went too far. He would lock the doors of the house, the windows, when he'd leave. The Gemara says he can't run a house that way. That's the guy who a fly falls into his cup, he tosses the whole cup. Then the Gemara says, what's the normal guy who takes out the fly and he drinks the rest of the cup? That's a person who knows that sometimes his wife is going to go over to the neighbors and she's going to borrow a cup of flour. She's going to say good morning to the neighbor. There's going to be certain minimal interaction, and that's like the fly in the cup. And you say, okay, whatever, I move on with life. Then you have the guy who, when the fly falls into the cup, he licks off the fly to make sure he gets every drop of wine. That, the Gemara says, is a guy that knows that his wife goes out and hangs out in the bars, and some nights she doesn't even come home and he doesn't know where she is. But so long as he has his nights with her, he doesn't care. So long as whatever else happens is... Right. So that's the guy who licks off the fly. So long as he gets his wine, nothing else matters. So the Gemara says that's not normal either. That's not the way a house should look. But this Mishnah is teaching us about neighbors. Hachek mishachein ra. And with neighbors, so we have to be careful. We have to be more careful. We discussed last week the idea that we don't call our neighbor's wife by her first name. We discussed the idea that in the office, we don't call by the first name. There's a certain distance that has to be there. It's very important, should be there. It's very...
You can do that, by the way.
Yeah, so...
neighbor's wife by the first name.
I didn't say you can't, I said you shouldn't. It's an element of modesty. It's the way we should behave. And we should be careful who our neighbors are.
How can you make out who's like a bad neighbor? Because like there's boundaries and overlaps. And how can you say, obviously someone's like kills someone or rapes someone, yeah, that's a bad neighbor.
Right. But sometimes you see that certain people are not the influence you want in your home. So part of our job is, as the father in the house, is to encourage certain relationships and diminish others. One of my daughters had a friend who lives a few houses from us, who we live on the second floor. So we have this big wall around the it's not a yard, but it's outside the door. It's like a yard. It's like synthetic grass. And there's this big wall because it's about like 10 meters high, 8 meters high. It's very dangerous. So this girl climbs up on that. Now, that's dangerous. And I said, you can't do that. She ignores me. So I said, you know, I just spoke to you. And she ignores me. So I said, you know, I want to talk to you for a minute. She turns around and walks home, like I don't exist. So I told my daughter, when she could still hear, I said, make sure that friend knows for the next week she's not allowed to come to our house. Now, this happened twice. Now she ignored me. I don't exist, right? She just walked away. But when she tried to come back, so I told my daughter no. And we had a different daughter, had a friend who would always mock her skirts. She would tell her, why don't you wear your skirts up above your knees? What do you care? And she'd always mock them. And I told my daughter that friendship has to end until she realizes she's not allowed to mock what you do. We're not telling her how she should dress, but she can't mock the way you dress. It took a half a year, but after that, the girl, till today, comes to our house, and eventually, she learned. So we have to guide the friendships of our children. We have to guide who our home is connected with. And the same is true. Who do you invite? Who do you develop friendships with? Who do you spend your free time with? The Mishnah says, distance yourself from a bad neighbor. So if there's a neighbor who you feel is inappropriate, so that's not the neighbor to develop a relationship with. Ve'al titchaber la'rasha. Don't connect with a wicked person. Very often it's tempting. They offer you to make a lot of money. And you know they're doing some things that are questionable, but it's not my problem what they're doing, right? That's what you tell yourself. The Mishnah warns us, be careful who you partner with. Al titchaber la'rasha. Don't connect with a wicked person. Don't tell yourself it's okay. And we give ourselves all kinds of reasons why it's legitimate. It's not. And the Mishnah gives you good advice. Don't connect with that type of person. Ve'al titya'esh min apuhanut. This has two meanings. Al titya'esh means don't give up. Min apuhanut, from bad things happening. So this has two meanings. It could mean, if bad things happen, don't give up. One of the things we have to remember is that things can turn for the better. Even when things seem very, very bad, don't give up. Al titya'esh, don't give up, min apuhanut, from bad things happening, because when they happen, you shouldn't give up. The other interpretation is, don't give up on bad things happening. If everything's going good, don't assume bad things won't happen. That's both, right? Yeah, both interpretations.
Bad stuff happens because stuff happens bad.
Yeah, that's life. That's the famous story of Shlomo HaMelech, that when he was lying on his deathbed, he gave his son a ring that had engraved on it the letters Gimel Zayin Yud. And he said to him, look at this ring in your happiest moments and in your saddest moments. So his son said, Dad, what does Gimel Zayin Yud tell me? He said to him, Gimel Zayin Yud stands for Gam Ze Yavor. This too shall pass. In your happiest moments, you should know this is going to pass. In your saddest moments, you should know this is also going to pass. Life is dynamic. There are ups, there are downs. And we have to remember that. We have to remember that in relationships as well. Sometimes relationships go through difficult periods. So you could have a few difficult moments. You could have a few difficult hours. You could have a few difficult days. You could have a few difficult weeks. You could have a few difficult months. And you could have a few difficult years. And that's all within the norm of a relationship. Relationships are dynamic. And just because they go through a period where things are bad, where things aren't pleasant, that doesn't mean it can't change. It can. And every relationship has its periods. There are nicer periods and there are harder periods. Al titya'esh, the Mishnah says, don't give up. Yeah, there are difficult times in life.
Can I ask a question about
about
the neighbors? What about people are not bad influence in terms of like just following directions, but just seem to be like stuck in a rut and doing and trying to progress, but not really doing much. They just seem to be going nowhere, just repeating the same patterns.
We all repeat the same patterns. very hard for us to get out of our patterns in life.
Well, I mean, do you keep like spending time with them and being friends with them, or do you lessen the interaction if it doesn't seem to be? It's not harmful, but it's not beneficial either. I mean, is it helping the other person, or is it?
You're not talking about a friendship. You're talking about a situation where you're helping someone, or you're retaining a relationship because in the hope that you'll help someone. That's what you're talking about.
So I was thinking about it. With friendships. I wasn't thinking about a romantic relationship.
No, I'm.
No, I was thinking about friendship.
If you're talking about friendship, so I don't think we can judge people. I think that we also keep repeating the same mistakes. Only we see it in other people, we have a harder time seeing it in ourselves. It's very hard for us to break out of the cycles of mistakes that we make, and we pay prices for them our whole lives. The person who's late continues being late and has a very hard time not being late. And so on. The person who's dishonest has a hard time becoming honest. All of life is a challenge to better ourselves and break the mold we're in, but it's a challenge because even when you think you've accomplished something, you find yourself back in the same cycle, in a different way, but back in the same cycle. It's a hard thing to change. So, look, my approach, and it's probably extreme, but it's the way I understood from my teachers, is to make relationships unconditional in the sense of that type of expectation. Meaning, if we're friends and we're friends, so the fact that he might be repeating mistakes, to some degree I'll be able to help him, and to some degree I won't. But that doesn't mean I shouldn't be his friend. I might decide to limit my assistance in a certain realm. Meaning it could be if a guy asks you for a loan, and you see he can't pay it back, and he asks you for another loan, and he still can't pay it back, so it could be the third loan you won't give him. But that doesn't mean you won't be his friend. Saying, and this is true, I have a friend that every job he got fired. Okay, so at some point I stopped getting him jobs because I didn't want my name connected to his name. Because I could see what he was doing that was getting him fired. But that didn't mean I broke the relationship. From my end, the relationship continued only in this realm. I saw I couldn't be a help. Okay, I'm saying, we often see in others their repeated mistakes, and we have to be honest with ourselves that they have their human foibles, we have ours. I don't know that we're more successful than them in our realm. Again, I don't have to suffer from their mistakes. I have to. That's a separate question. But just because they don't advance, no, I don't know if I advance either. I advance, but I don't know if I advance in the areas that I need to change so pivotally as you're describing. I really don't know. I'm not just saying it. I really don't know.
So I guess like people that keep saying that they want to do ABC but don't actually do it, and they're still
okay.
They're still stuck in the same place.
I feel bad for them, but. You know, if I can't help him, I can't help him. That I don't see why that would affect our friendship.
It just gets exhausting hearing talk about the same stuff.
Oh, so that's a different thing. And then you're saying that sometimes there are friendships which tire us out. So then it depends. If it's a sibling, is it someone who we owe it to, or is it, you know, sometimes you have people who you have to be there for them. I've had friends who had different medical situations where if they didn't take care of their diet, they would kill themselves. It could be a diabetic, it could be someone who was overweight. And sometimes you could say something, almost always what you say is irrelevant. Almost always you're getting nowhere. But at the end of the day, the fact that you see someone repeatedly making mistakes, it's sad, but what can you do? You know how many students I had that I told them before Yom Kippur they're not allowed to fast, they're risking their lives? And they said, Rabbi, with all due respect, I'm not listening to you on that one. I had it many times, and I'm still friends with them, and we still have a relationship, and even though I believe they're fasting on Yom Kippur is a transgression, but I have to judge them. I did what I could. I gave them the medical research, the halachic sources, and I begged them not to. I even called before Yom Kippur, after Yom Kippur. I told them, okay, you messed up this year, you fasted on Yom Kippur. Next year, I hope you'll do tshuva. You know, I told them those lines that hopefully it'll sink in. And it didn't. It didn't. I'm fairly confident they continued fasting against the halacha. There are medical situations where it's not permissible for a person to fast. Diabetics. Most of the time, a diabetic is risking his life fasting on Yom Kippur. So they'll argue, but I'm okay. Right. But does your doctor approve it? Does research back it? Etc. So I don't think it's ever affected our friendship. I feel bad for them. They think they're doing a mitzvah, and they're not. But that's it. We move on. Yudah ben Tabai v'Shimon ben Shatach kibelu mehem. So we've hit a generation, Yudah ben Tabai and Shimon ben Shatach. Shimon ben Shatach was the brother-in-law of the Judean king Yanai. And the Gemara is not sure who Yanai was. Yanai was an early king during the Hasmonean period. And Yanai was a Sadducee. And the Gemara is uncertain if Yanai is the same Yochanan Kohen Gadol. We know that Yochanan led the Hasmoneans. But what most people don't notice is that the Gemara in Masechet Brachot says that Yochanan Kohen Gadol, who was extraordinarily pious, he made institutions in the Beit HaMikdash, he made institutions in Jerusalem, and he made institutions for all of Israel. We have a Masechet called Masechet Dmai, which revolves solely around Yochanan Kohen Gadol's institution. And the Gemara says he was so pious, he was Kohen Gadol for 80 years. And then the Gemara says at the end of his life, he became a Sadducee. So Yochanan Kohen Gadol hears God's voice behind the parochet. When he goes in, the Gemara says he heard a heavenly voice. That's the level he was on. And then the Gemara in Brachos says at the end of his life, he became a Sadducee. He left the tradition. He decided he's not going with the rabbinic tradition. So this is Yochanan Kohen Gadol who led the Hasmoneans. This is a point we don't say in Hanukkah, right? But that's what the Gemara says. So, according to one opinion in the Gemara, Yochanan Kohen Gadol was in fact Yanai, the first king. That we speak about Yanai the king. So one opinion says that was Yochanan Kohen Gadol. And he was the brother-in-law of Shimon ben Shatach. He married Shimon ben Shatach's sister. Shimon ben Shatach, when Yanai executed the sages, so Shimon ben Shatach was hidden by his sister. His sister, the queen, hid him. And we have many interesting stories about his relationship with his brother-in-law, Yanai the king. So now the Mishnah says, the next in the line of the tradition. So this is already, we've entered the Hasmonean period. This is the last two centuries of the second Beit HaMikdash. We've entered the last two centuries. This is after the story of Chanukah, the period of Yudah ben Tabai and Shimon ben Shatach. Kiblu mehem. They received their tradition. What were you saying?
So this is, yeah, like the kings, the Hasmonean kings, right?
Right. This is the Hasmonean period now. Yudah ben Tabai omer, Yudah ben Tabai tot. Al ta'as atzmecha ke'orechei hadayanim. Al ta'as atzmecha ke'orechei hadayanim. Don't be like a lawyer. People ask you, should I make this claim, that claim? Don't help people making their claims and then get involved in fights. When two people come to you and ask you to rule, so when you listen to their story, you have to view them both as though they're both wicked people. Because if you enter the court case and you say, he's such a tzaddik, look at his beard. Look at what a tzaddik he is. He comes across the world to learn Torah in Israel. You think he would lie? You think he would steal? For sure he's in the right. Well, you're not going to attain justice by approaching a case that way. You have to be open to the idea that you don't know who's right. So the Mishnah says, as hard as it is, you have to say, maybe both sides are wicked. You approach a court case, you have to be open to both sides being wicked. And when they leave you after your court case, so you have to look at them both as tzaddikim. So it could be he and his plumber had a court case. And at the end of the case, you tell the plumber, I'm sorry, what you did was gross negligence. Michael's 100% right. You have to go fix it. You have to pay damages. And what you did for the last 2 years that you ignored your responsibility, you were dead wrong. So after you give him this whole speech and you obligate him to pay 15,000 shekel, you might think, what a bum that plumber is. Says the Mishnah, wait a second. He took out his wallet. He paid the 15,000 shekel. Now you, the judge, have to view him as a righteous person. How so? You tell yourself, he didn't think he was wrong. He withheld the money because he thought he was right. He didn't think he did anything wrong. So kshekiblu aleihem et adin, when they accept your ruling, so then the Mishnah says, you have to look at both of them as righteous people. Don't go walk away thinking, what a terrible person that plumber is. It's only after we gave him a ruling that he paid the money. Look at it the other way. He paid the money? So now judge him favorably. Tell yourself, he must have made a mistake. He must have remembered incorrectly. There must be some mistake in the way he saw things. But don't look at him as an evil person. So the Mishnah says, when they walk into the court case, you have to be open to the fact that either side could be wrong. So view them both as evil. When you finish the court case, they accept your ruling and they follow through on it. So then says the Mishnah, look at them both as righteous people. But wait a second. This is a nice gimmick. But what do I really think? Meaning, that's the Mishnah, but what do you really think? There's a story about Rav Tzvi Yehuda, Rav Bigun's Rebbe. The students were with him, and the student came in and told him that his wife was on the verge of dying. The doctor said she was going to pass away that day. And Rav Tzvi Yehuda sat with the student and cried with him. And then the student got up and left. And a minute later, a student came in and told him, Rebbe, I'm on my way to the wedding. I want you to wish me mazel tov. I'm getting married. A different student walked in. A second student. So Rav Tzvi Yehuda radiated happiness. He smiled. He danced with him. He shook his hands. And the second student left. And the students who were sitting there, they were thinking how could he switch so quickly? A minute ago he was crying, and now he's so happy. Both students felt like he was completely with them the moments they were there. And the lesson they learned from it is how much a person can control their feelings. There's a time to cry with someone. There's a time to be happy with someone, be happy with someone. And this sounds like something that's very difficult. So I'll tell you a story I had. I was at Givat HaTachmoshet. It was Chol HaMoed, Sukkot or Pesach, I don't remember. And I was taking my kids to the Kotel. We try to go every Yom Tov to go to the Kotel. And we're standing at Givat HaTachmoshet at Ammunition Hill waiting for the train. And a phone call comes in, and one student tells me, Rebbe, my wife just gave birth to a boy. So I was very happy with him. Yofi. I hang up the phone with him. Another student calls and tells me, Rebbe, my wife just miscarried. And I sat on the phone with him, and I commiserated with him sincerely. And I hang up the phone with him, and another student calls and says, Rebbe, my wife just gave birth to a boy. And I felt like a ping pong at that moment. I said, I'm still crying with the first guy. And I left the second guy. The first guy called and said he gave birth to a boy. I was sincerely happy with him. The second guy called, his wife miscarried. I felt very bad. It was her second or third miscarriage. I really was upset with him. And when the third guy called, I said to myself, can I be as happy as I was with the first guy? I said to myself, now's your challenge. You know what you were like a half hour ago in that first conversation. Now what are you going to be like in this third conversation? And I was surprised to see how you can. You can really say, stop. That's where I was a minute ago. Now I have to be completely focused with this guy. And I ended, and I tried my best to be very happy with the third guy who called. And I hung up the phone. And my kids are going, Abba, Abba, the train's coming. And I'm standing there thinking, now where am I? You know, you start feeling schizophrenic, right? Am I happy or sad? And I'm digesting what just happened in these three phone calls. And then I look at my kids, and they're on Chol HaMoed mode, right? They're going on a trip to the Kotel. So I said, now you have to be happy. That's like a zoom. Okay, you got to ignore the second conversation and be focused with them and be happy. And it was surprising to me to see that you could. That if you decide, mind over matter, my job right now is to be happy with them. I had a similar story. Some of you know Yehuda Frankel. So we had the good merit of walking Yehuda Frankel down to his wedding. But what Yehuda Frankel doesn't know, he was a student here, and we learned together for many years. What he doesn't know is that the day of his wedding, for 3 days before that, my wife's grandmother, who we both loved very dearly, was ill in critical care. And as we were on our way to the wedding, we got the phone call that she passed away. And we were on our way to the wedding, and my wife and I were both crying. And then we got to the wedding hall, and we stood outside, and we said, okay, now we have a mitzvah to be happy in Yehuda's wedding. And we stood outside and reoriented ourselves, and said, now, we're walking him down to the aisle, right? We're walking him down to his wedding. So what can we do now? We have to be happy with him. The fact that we're going as the funeral, as they're preparing the funeral for my wife's grandmother, and I really loved her. I had a very good relationship with her. I miss her till today. It's irrelevant. Right now, it's his wedding. I have to be happy with him. So these instances in life taught me that even people like us can do this. When you decide, this is my responsibility now, I have to do it, you can do it. You can. It's a decision. It's knowing that's my responsibility now and I can take control. The Mishnah says, look at how you view them. A minute ago, you viewed them as criminals. You finished the course case, view them as pious people. Can I control how I view someone else? Yes, you can. We have control over how we view people. We have control over how we feel. We have control, and we should use that control. And then we can really guide our feelings in the right direction. It's not one of the mistakes that we make in the 21st century is that we want things to affect us, as though we should be passive, and this makes me happy. Not true. You choose whether to be happy with that. It's a choice we make. That's Viktor Frankl, right? Man's search for meaning. There's one area of control we have in life. Much of the life we don't have control. But what we do control is our decision of how to react to things. That's a choice we make.